This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I've got Kerry Jr. the second sitting across from me here in the studio. He is the show's producer. Hey, Kerry.
How you doing, Stephen? I'm over here bopping my head because of this groove.
the music.
Yeah, I always got to hum it when it comes on.
Sam Bovian, who created the music for Created Equal, is just a genius, and he is so wonderful at setting that vibe that you want for the show. Kerry, I don't know if you're watching March Madness right now, but I am. I'm watching both the men's and the women's, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm that much into this time of year and the competition and the storylines, all of the drama.
You're a big basketball guy?
I'm a big sports guy, right? Okay. I would be watching the bowl games in December as well.
Where are we? Sweet 16 is where we are now, right?
Sweet 16 is where we are now, and by the end of this weekend, we'll be down to four teams, which will be the near climax of all of this. Mm-hmm. But there's something that I have been noticing, of course, and I think a lot of people are noticing as you watch these games, is the prevalence of ads for betting. I mean, every break there are ads for betting. There are tabs and little flags for betting all over the sports websites and. I mean, you can't get away from it. You can't get away from the idea that if you're watching this, if you're enjoying this, one of the things that'll make it better for you is if you have
put your money
on the
it.
Line.
Right, yeah, take a risk. I think I've gotten a lot more familiar with Jamie Foxx recently, too, because of his MGM
He's doing
advertisements.
Those ads, yeah.
Yeah, no, I see it all the time. I also listen to some sports podcasts, football podcasts, too, so I hear about, I think, every break, and then they have the money lines, and they have the analysis of sports has also started to include betting. So if you're
money.
Listening to just... Yeah, to include money. If you're listening to figure out how the sports, just the strategy of sports, you're also going to hear about the strategy of how much money you can put on the line for that. So, it's getting really, really prevalent
and
now.
It's being pushed, right?
Right.
This is a hey, you should do this. You should want to do this. This is a big part of all of what's happening on the court or on the field. And if you're not betting, somehow You're missing out. And I guess that aspect of it really reminds me of the subject that we're going to talk about today, which is that for some people, they can't really resist that.
Yeah.
Right? They can't resist that push or that tug toward the idea of involving betting with the enjoyment of sports. And for some people, it means that they're addicted, that they become addicted to gambling. And there's a real public health crisis unfolding in our country around the addiction to gambling and the gambling that is related to sports.
Yeah, I would say when it comes to the gambling element of the sports, I mean, gambling as a whole for me have always kind of been hesitant towards because of these potential impacts. I always wonder, you know, they always say only gamble whatever you're willing to lose, right?
Right.
And you have to be really, really conscious of what you're doing when you're doing that. And I think when you slip into some of these habits, it's harder, as you said, to resist that type of behavior. So to see that this is being pushed in the sports realm does make me think, wait, how many more people now are susceptible to falling into that rut, to betting on these games in addition to what they've already been doing? So I think this is much, very much relevant conversation.
Absolutely.
Today.
I mean, the games start again today and we'll run through the weekend. So today on Created Equal, we're going to ask and answer the question, is sports gambling a public health crisis? And if it is, what do we do about that? We are planning to have two guests in the conversation today. We've got one up front who is with us. Dr. Shane Krause is a professor of psychology at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He's also the director of the Behavioral Addictions Lab at UNLV, which conducts research on compulsive behaviors, including gambling. Dr. Krause, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. In a little bit, we'll be joined by Saul Malik, who is a public speaker who educates the public on the perils of gambling addiction by sharing his personal story. He was a compulsive gambler, is now in recovery. That has been a seven-year journey for Saul. We're trying to get his connection all nailed down so that he can join the conversation as well. Also, today we are taking your phone calls here on Created Equal. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. Tell us what you make of the ubiquity of sports betting ads. Is this something that is making people feel like they have to do this to be enjoying sports? Are you someone who is a sports bettor or has become a sports bettor since it has been legalized in 2018? Or are you someone who is really wary of all of this and the way it affects our society? You can also go to Twitter at WDET or hashtag created equal, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Okay, Dr. Krause, I'm really excited to talk with you about this because I think, again, as we get ready for more of the basketball tournament, this is something that you can't escape. I can't get away from it. I can't think about sports anymore without thinking about the ads and the little taglines they have and the tunes. It's just married to the idea. So let's first, though, talk about when this becomes a problem. So can you define what a gambling disorder is when it goes beyond just having fun?
Yeah, great question, right? So gambling disorder, we know it's an addictive disorder. It's an addiction similar to substance use, right? So it's the only behavior we know that is like diagnostically an addiction. So what it looks like is we look at symptoms. So when you're gambling, or in this case, sports betting, starts to have issues, things like when you're gambling more amounts or more often, more frequency, right, than you really want to. When you try to stop or quit, you're getting really irritable, you know, struggling with that. You say, hey, I'm not going to gamble this week. I'm going to try to stop or quit and cut back, and yet you can't stop yourself. So things like also thinking a lot, finding yourself thinking frequently about gambling, you know, gambling when distressed, going to place a bet. You know, let's say you lose funds where you lose on a match, you're going to go back the next day and try to, quote, win that back. That's called chasing losses, which is actually probably the most common symptom for those with a problem. So lying about your gambling, risking relationships and things like that. So those are kind of the symptoms that we see when it's really interfering with your ability to kind of live your life and to, you know, do the things you need to do.
And there are mental, emotional, and even physical effects of this gambling addiction. Talk about what those look like.
Yeah, I mean, I think gambling, you know, when I do a lot of trainings and talks, I always let people know that gambling is often a slow process. Many people gamble for years without really any issues, but then they start to creep up on them. But as they develop more problems and eventually develop a disorder, it can take, you know, anywhere from 7-8 years. It's a slow process for many people. They really have, you know, really significant relationship issues, health issues, mental health addictions, such as substance use or alcohol or depression. So it's kind of I always call it, you know, it's like bananas that comes in bunches. So just because you might be struggling with a gambling, you're probably also going to be struggling with other mental health, legal, you know, sometimes legal, sometimes financial debt, which is pretty significant for folks.
Yeah. So I said in the intro, and I have read a lot about the idea of this being a public health crisis, somebody who is you know, doing this, and you know, someone who can't do this, can't stop doing this, is a victim of a public health crisis. What do you think about that language? Is that the right way to describe this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, one of the things that's lacking is really good research, right? So you know, I do agree. I do think it's going to be a public health crisis coming our way. I mean, just to give context, in 6 years, right, sports betting was legalized by the Supreme Court decision, and now we have over 30 states and $300 billion has been wagered since then. For March Madness, probably under $3 billion will be wagered. That's a lot of money. Very few states have. Most states don't have regulations or, you know, clear regulations. Or most states, including, I think, Michigan, also really lacks probably free access to treatment and resources for folks. So there's a lot of concerns, and the heavy advertisement, I mean, just bombardment of that, I think also means we might be, you know, seeing some issues forthcoming.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Give us a call. Let us know if you're enjoying March Madness, in part because you're participating in the betting that is now absolutely legal to do with sports gambling. Is it something that makes the experience better for you? Is it something that you feel like you couldn't do without now? Certainly the commercials suggest that we shouldn't be able to do without betting as part of sports enjoyment. Also give us a call if you're somebody who's really worried about the way in which this has married gambling and entertainment. Also give us a call and let us know what you think about the way gambling plays out in our own community here in Southeast Michigan. We have three casinos in the city of Detroit, another across the river in Windsor. If you want to go gamble, it's not that difficult to do. I mean, you really have a lot of access to it here. If you talk to pastors in our community, if you talk to social workers in our community, you know that we're experiencing in some ways our own problems with sports addiction or gambling addiction, betting addiction. Let us know how that plays out for you. Are you somebody who would rather not see this happening at all, or are you somebody who thinks we just need better controls over it? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET, and we can include you in the program that way. Dr. Krause, let's talk about why gambling is so addictive. Why do we like this so much, and why is it so hard in some cases to resist that level of addiction where you can't stop?
Yeah. I mean, humans have been gambling for thousands of years, right? So we know that. And I think for most people, you know, some form of gambling, whether it's lottery or, you know, going to a casino occasionally, it's really not problematic, right? It's not necessarily, doesn't evolve into an addiction. But I think for some people, I think the science behind gambling, you know, with casinos, with no windows, the colors and the lights and the way they design things to keep attention, right, to keep constant focus and to have small rewards so, you know, you're actually losing but you feel like you're still winning something. Well, that's really what kind of often kind of hooks or makes people kind of start developing these issues. The other thing, it's the only thing where you can win more money. You know, I treat people with substance use and, you know, you don't win more alcohol if you buy alcohol. But for gambling, you can win more money. So motives, why people do it, for underserved, for really struggling, vulnerable groups or communities, people want to win their money to kind of buy their way out of poverty and oppression and, you know, really disadvantaged communities. And that's unique to gambling. And I think that drives why, for lotteries, for example, we see, you know, the lowest income communities, you know, buy 50% of all lottery sales, you know. Mm-hmm. So they just disproportionately, because it's a way to buy, you know, a path out of poverty. And I think that's the same narrative I think we might see for some individuals for sports betting. Well, I know the teams, I have extra knowledge, I'm going to put more money on this game. But again, gambling is gambling, right? There's always risk. So I think that's the logic, or the motives is also makes it really complicated for gambling.
Yeah. When we think about that that dimension of it, this idea of it either accelerating or causing poverty, it kind of reminds me, though, of a question I've had for a long time, which is this more appealing to people who don't have a lot of money than it is to people who do? I mean, there are people who can afford to go to the casino and bet all day and night and lose thousands or tens of thousands of dollars, and it just doesn't really matter to them because they have that kind of money. is it as appealing to those folks as it is to people who don't have that money and who are doing the same thing? Is there something about poverty that makes this more appealing?
Right. So I think it's about, you know, the looking at gambling for entertainment purposes, right? And amount, how much people gamble and how they spend their money is often individually based, which makes sense. But it's the motives, right? So if people are trying to win money or to make money, right? So they don't have a lot of money, I want to double or triple my money. That is often where we see that more common among those with lacking money or struggling with money, or those who become very financially indebted because of gambling. They're $20,000 in and they're going to actually gamble more and take greater risk to, quote, win the money back, right? So I think with sports betting, though, you know, we have the largest longitudinal study in the country right now on this, and we our trend right now for sports betting is it's generally happening a little bit more common among men, those under 35, and those with having higher income levels. Mm-hmm. But I would just say it's very early in the game to be making strong conclusions. I think women are jumping into the sports betting realm very quickly, and so are lots of other individuals. So I think we got to be very careful. We don't discount or assume where the problems might be when we really don't have the data or research yet.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more of Created Equal. We are going to keep Dr. Shane Krause with us of the Behavioral Addictions Lab at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. We're also going to add another voice to the conversation, Saul Malik, who's a public speaker who talks about the perils of gambling addiction. He has his own story about compulsive gambling and recovery, a 7-year journey. We want to hear from you as well. Let's get going on the phones and on social. Tell us what you think of sports betting. Tell us if you think it is more appealing now that it's legal and that it's being advertised nonstop on events like March Madness, which if you're like me, you've been watching pretty intently. Or tell us if you're somebody who's really wary of this. Maybe you have an experience with sports addiction gambling. Maybe you have an experience in your family with someone who has a gambling addiction and the damage that it caused both psychologically and emotionally and financially to your family. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET or hashtag Created Equal. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Talking about gambling addictions and the way that they are forming an important public health crisis in our nation and their relationship to sports betting, which is much more ubiquitous in the sports world. If you're watching March Madness right now, you are, of course, aware of all of the ads that come at you, asking you to participate in this other dimension of sports entertainment. Put some money on the line. Win big. You hear that over and over during these events now. And if you're online, of course, you see the same thing. What does that mean for our society? What does that mean for things like inequality, poverty, and the idea that people can escape poverty easily and won't get trapped in it by taking risks? We're talking with Dr. Shane Krause, who is a researcher who really specializes in this subject. He's also the director of the Behavioral Addictions Lab at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, which conducts research on compulsive behaviors, including gambling. We also want to hear from you on the phones and on social. Give us a call. Let us know if you're participating in all of this fervor over sports gambling and the easy way that you can do it now because the Supreme Court has made it much more legal than it used to be. Or give us a sense if you're somebody who is wary of all of this, either because you've had an issue with gambling addiction in your past, or if you're a member of a family that's had to deal with psychological, emotional, or financial damage that was done by someone who did have a gambling addiction. I'll tell you, when I talk with pastors in Detroit, I hear all the time about families who are kind of pushed into crisis when an elderly loved one dies and they realize that some of the assets that that person had and was maybe going to pass on to their family are gone. Gone to the casinos, gone to the craps tables, to the blackjack table, all of these things that are really easily accessed here in Detroit. It is a crisis. It is the kind of thing that that people are having to deal with far more frequently. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number. Also, go to Twitter, hashtag created equal or at WDET. And be part of the program that way. I also want to add another voice to the conversation here. Saul Malik is a public speaker who educates the public on the perils of gambling addiction, and he shares his personal story. He was a compulsive gambler and is now in recovery. It's something he's been struggling with since 2017. Saul Malik, welcome to Created Equal.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me on here.
Yeah. So let's start with your story. What brought you to gambling in the first place, and what brought you to realize that you had a problem with it?
So I always was a big sports fan growing up, and my love for fantasy baseball eventually progressed as a college student to where I got introduced to an online bookmaker and started betting on sports. And it was very low key at first. I remember thinking, well, what's 10 bucks? You know, it's as if I spent money to go bowling with a friend. And it elicited these feelings of being a big shot and feeling like I was in control, and gave me some quick money for sure. It was a way to enjoy the game. And so I wanted to keep replicating that feeling. And it eventually, over a couple of years, progressed from that initial little $10 baseball bet to where I was betting multiple times, live betting on ping pong matches, tennis matches, darts games, all sorts of stuff. So it was a very deep and dark turn. And it really came to the forefront of, you know, my life when I lost my relationship with my girlfriend from school, which I know of all things seems kind of trivial compared to the broken family relationships and the lost finances and everything. But I believe that that point really illuminated to me just how much I was giving up on a daily basis to this addiction. And that whenever I thought I was at a bottom, it was just continuing to go deeper and deeper. And people say they're at rock bottom, and I say you're not at rock bottom till you lose your life, because there's always deeper to dig.
Yeah. So Saul, you talked about initially being interested in something like fantasy baseball and going from that to other things. What led you from one point to another? I mean, I know a lot of people who participate in things like fantasy baseball, but how did it catch your interest to bet money and more money on other things?
So that's a good point. And I don't pretend that every person's experience is my experience, of course. I think naturally for me, I do have a nature of being an impulsive personality. And I think that jumping right into betting on sports was something that from the onset, I really didn't think through. It was just a very natural progression, just because I loved the rush of it. I loved the action, and I liked feeling that I had of being a big shot. So it was sort of that I'd primed myself for all these years. And, you know, I also like to say that my relationship with sports was already unhealthy. I already had too much of a vested interest in the results of sports games to determine my happiness or lack thereof. So it was really that I just kind of walked right into it based on previous patterns I established. But I'll say this really quickly. I think that there is such a large appeal to a lot of people with sports betting because, of course, a lot of people are major sports fans. And with jobs being hard to find or people just don't like their jobs, well, shoot, what's a better job than sitting back on your phone watching a basketball game and collecting thousands of dollars in 2 hours? I mean, that couldn't sound more appealing to an unsuspecting person.
Yeah, but it's not very realistic, is it? So, I mean, it's something that sounds like fun, but that's not what happens, is it?
No. I mean, you're right. It is unrealistic, but again, and I'm not here to make excuses for myself. I do think just the very hope of the whole situation is so appealing that, you know, it's even almost glamorous to think, oh, only whatever 1% of sports bettors are going to hit some huge profit. And then that drives that feeling even further of, well, I'm going to be that 1% because I know the field better than everyone else and I'm going to do it. But also, I believe that there's sort of a lack of insight as to, oh, well, addiction could happen to me because, well, I'll control it. And not everyone is addicted, of course. Not everyone will become addicted, of course. But there is a huge draw, especially, I would think, to people on both sides of the ledger, people that think they have excess money to where they can afford it. And then if you look on the other end of people that are very, very much struggling financially and personally, and they think, well, what do I have to lose? Put in $5 on some huge parlay and I can pay my bills for the month. So it's very much selling hope.
Yeah. So I want to have you talk also about the damage that this did to you, what that damage looked like, and what recovery, I guess, has been like.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I like to say that gambling on its own was not this giant wreckage in my life. I mean, I feel that I certainly would acknowledge my own role in my decisions, but of course, having the addiction really amplified kind of the chaos, really sped it up. I would say when I look at the consequences of the gambling, the first place I would look is my family. And I have parents that love me very much. I have a twin brother, actually, who's always been by my side and had a very close relationship with my grandparents since growing up. And I recall just hearing the stories of how my parents were losing sleep over the whole debacle because they weren't sure if I was in danger. They didn't know if I was going to harm myself. They weren't sure any of these things. And so really what happened was my parents were living the lives of compulsive gamblers despite never having placed a sports bet. And it affected my brother as well, of course, as he was off in school having to worry about this. So that's where I look first and foremost, and I really betrayed the trust of these people in my life because in order to maintain my gambling lifestyle, I had to, because telling the truth would mean an end to my gambling. So that's where I look first and foremost, and then of course my friends were thrown in the mix, and I had bookies that were texting my friends about why I didn't pay them and everything. So that's sort of the overview, I'd say, is mainly in relationships with family. And I think it's so devastating because trust, you know, when you can end it so quickly and then over the course of years, it has to be consistently slowly brought back to the surface.
Yeah. So you're in recovery and have been, I think, for a while. Talk about what that means. Do you never indulge in sports betting, or is it the kind of thing where you can just manage it better and not get yourself into trouble?
So I have been gamble free since July of 2019, and that has included not even doing a bracket here for March Madness, even though I am, of course, rooting for U of H, you know, Houston, where I'm from, rooting for them, but I'm not betting on them. So, you know, it's been a steady dose of I continue to go to 12-step meetings. So, you know, there's Gamblers Anonymous. I go to the meetings perpetually as I find that to be a really helpful solution. I find it helpful because it doesn't only, and I'm not speaking as a spokesman of the program. I know it's very intentional to distance that, but it's a great opportunity to connect with like-minded people going through the same difficulties. And I feel as though I don't really speak on this enough, which I really need to, is that the program has given me a belief in a higher power, and I'm not preaching or anything, and I don't even subscribe to a particular religion, but having a spiritual sort of identification has been really helpful to get out of my own thinking, having something to depend on. And so really it's been a wholesale change of my behavior and more than just stopping gambling, because hey, plenty of people out there don't gamble and they're still miserable. So I believe it's about turning around all sorts of choices, doing it consistently, and having support in one's life. So hey, I don't bet on sports anymore, and I definitely interact with sports in a much different way than I used to even before I gambled.
Dr. Cross, I want to bring you back into the conversation here and talk about the opportunity that exists for people like Saul to get help. It's not universal, right? There are people like Saul who have means and family who can help them get past this, but there are an awful lot of people for whom that's kind of elusive, if not absolutely impossible.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first I want to say, Saul, thank you for sharing your story and your experience, and I think that it resonates with a lot of the people that I treat as well. But yeah, unfortunately, you know, despite, you know, gambling being, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that, you know, we make in revenue, and it's, you know, big business, there's really not universal or free treatment around throughout many of the states. So every state regulates gambling, but they don't often really provide much to any money for treatment, which is really disappointing. You know, so Nevada has kind of an older system where, you know, we made in $23 billion last year, and we have a budget about $2.2 million for free treatment for anyone here or their family. So it's good. I think we need more money. That's always my soapbox here for Nevada. But I don't think that exists in most places, including Michigan, despite Michigan likely, you know, having issues and including the Detroit area. And so I think it's really, if you're going to offer, if you're going to have casinos and offer sports betting and legalize it, you really have a responsibility to provide free access and treatment for those affected by gambling. That means the person and their family. Again, GA, Gamblers Anonymous, is good, is great. Some people love it. I think there's lots of resources. There are different paths to help people recover, and what matters is finding the path that works for each person. But I think greater access to treatment is really has to happen in across the United States, and it just doesn't exist at this point.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Saul Malik and Dr. Shane Kraus about gambling addiction and sports gambling addiction in particular, a really relevant subject as we get ready for the second weekend of March Madness this year. We're going to get going with you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number called, and tell us what you make of sports betting. Maybe you're participating in it. Maybe you're horrified by it. What do you think is the public health dimension of so many people participating in that? You can also go to Twitter and at WDET or hashtag Created Equal. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson. I'm glad you're with us. We have two guests today. Saul Malik is a public speaker who talks about the perils of gambling addiction by sharing his personal story as a compulsive gambler. Also with us is Shane Kraus. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and also the director of the Behavioral Addictions Lab at UNLV, which conducts research on compulsive behaviors, including gambling. We're talking about the public health crisis that is unfolding around sports betting in particular, which has just become much more universal over the last 6 years since the Supreme Court legalized sports betting in almost all forms. And if you're watching something like March Madness right now, you see how ubiquitous this is. Every ad break is full of solicitations to participate in sports betting. That didn't used to be the way you watched something like March Madness. We want to know from you as well, our listeners, what you make of sports betting and the growth of sports betting, what you make of gambling addiction, something that we see unfolding here in our community as well around the three casinos that we have in the city of Detroit and the one that exists across the across the river in Windsor. What do you think of all of that? What do you make of what the Supreme Court did, and what responsibilities do you think we have to make sure that more people don't fall into this this problem? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and either at WDET or hashtag Created Equal and be part of the conversation that way. Let's start today with Vernon in Auburn Hills. Vernon, what's on your mind?
I agree. It's overwhelming the amount of ads that are on TV for gambling and sports gambling. And I just missed it as no big deal. And then I went to a Lions playoff game in a sports bar, and I haven't been in a sports bar in years. And the entire bar was packed, and listening to people talking, sitting at the bar, sitting at tables, everyone is consumed with sports betting. They have their telephones, they're betting right as the game is playing on over and unders, and it's overwhelming. And I think the advertising should be treated the way they did tobacco in the 60s and just said, man, this addiction is just too much. I had no idea that the entire bar was overwhelmed with gambling and betting on a Lions game. And the people I was there with were just old drinking buddies. We couldn't name one player on the team. We just went there to, you know, hang out. And the people are just consumed. They're just, it's an addiction that's really has to be addressed.
Yeah. Vernon, I really appreciate the call and the story. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time in sports bars anymore. I used to, but I imagine if I went, I would also be bombarded by these solicitations for betting. I do like your analogy to tobacco, because of course that was something that for a long time was allowed to be sold and pushed, you know, advertised really aggressively, and then the government decided that it was a public health scourge, and it changed. Dr. Krause, I wonder what you make of the possibility of, you know, re-regulating sports betting and the way it is marketed, especially to children, I guess, or younger people, and whether there's an opportunity for Congress or someone to kind of rethink some of this.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's really lacking is, you know, every state kind of regulates itself, and some states have very little regulation. It's kind of the wild, wild west right now, particularly sports betting. Everyone wants the money, but no one really wants to actually prevent problems. And I think we actually need a federal agency that's going to regulate and create a national standard, including for marketing. Yeah, it's out of control. I mean, it's too much, you know, and this is, I think, and again, the issue with sports betting that makes it a little different from a lot of gambling is most people don't, you know, emotionally. So I'm in Las Vegas, which is, you know, Raiders Nation, right? So if you go to Las Vegas, everyone loves the Raiders. And if you don't, you have to not tell them that. And people have a lot of pride, and that's a good thing. And, you know, lots of us love sports, but they identify with the team. And then also because they're the how they feel, they bet and take greater risk. And most people don't identify with, you know, with a slot machine or a craps table per se, the same way they might with the Lions or with, you know, another sports team. So I think the advertisement towards kids, it's everywhere. I think using athletes, you know, who often are prime examples for, you know, for many kids and youth, is also really concerning. And the biggest thing is there's no research. I mean, we have probably the largest and only sports betting study of its kind. And yet, you know, billions and billions of dollars are being made. And yet there's virtually no research or access to treatment. I mean, it's really appalling, honestly. So the caller was absolutely right. It should be regulated like tobacco, or there should be some insights. This is an addiction just like anything else.
Yeah. Vernon, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's next go to Catherine in Birmingham. Yeah. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say I have kids in college, and it really, really disturbs me that there are so many advertisements now, both on the TV or and in around the college campus. Kids are just starting to learn how to be responsible with money. They often get their first credit card And this is not the message of how to be responsible with your money. I remember pyramid schemes when I was in college, and that was a big problem. This is just easier access to that get-rich-quick idea for young people.
Yeah.
I also really hate that the ads seem to really focus on Black men. It's usually Black men, and you might have this first-generation Black male on a college campus, and this is the ads and the image of how to get rich quick when you're there to study and do better for yourself and your family.
Yeah. Yeah. Catherine, that contrast is really interesting. The idea of, you know, African-American men being in college and then being solicited to get rich quick through sports betting. Dr. Krause, we haven't talked a lot about the kind of demographic distinctions that I think can be made about susceptibility to this and the way this is marketed. I mean, you pointed out that they're using athletes to push sports betting in a lot of cases. What I see are African American entertainers, Jamie Foxx, Kevin Hart, being in these ads, and I assume that is an effort to get African Americans, and in particular African American men, and maybe in particular young African American men, to do this more.
Yeah, I would just say, I absolutely agree with you. I would just say it's a little bit dated, but, you know, from a research perspective, we know African-Americans are double the rate for problem gambling compared to whites. So so we know right there from out the gate we have an issue. Now, how that looks for sports betting, I think sports betting is new and it's evolving, but I think that trend's going to play out the same. Yeah, unfortunately, ads are doing exactly what you're saying, right? They're having this, you know, free $200, you know, they use free or, you know, bonus play or no loss, you know, money and things like that. And they're using influential individuals. Many are African-American, you know, entertainers. And they're really targeting youth and young men, particularly, who are more influenceable. And they're really more likely to take greater risks to some of these ads. You know, when you say, oh, yeah, I guarantee wins, right? When it's gambling, there's no such thing, right? It's you know, they always get their money. That's why the casinos make a lot of money. So,
right. Yeah, the house, you know, always wins people, in the end. Right,
exactly. They're all making profits, right? If you know, all casinos continue to stay open, right, because they're making profits. So, yeah, I think it's a concern, and I don't think we're even thinking about it. And I think it's a really, really big issue that's we're going to see across college campuses as well as other places. There was a study that came out. I have to find it, but they looked at college students, and they found 1 in 5 college students had used financial aid to pay for
oh, wow,
wager on sports. And again, that to me is exceptionally alarming. Now, I don't have more specifics on that, but I think this is something we should be looking at.
Yeah. Saul Malik, you go and speak frequently on college campuses and to young people about sports gambling and gambling addiction. I wonder what you hear and what you learn from the young adults that you come across there.
Yes, Stephen. So primarily, I've actually been going to high schools. I have been doing some colleges as well, trying to get more of that. But a main talking point that I actually hear at the high school level has to do with parents. A lot of these young guys are talking about how they're getting access to these betting accounts because of their parents creating the opportunities, or they'll take a grandparent's ID or something to register. I heard about that a couple times when I was up in New York. And really what strikes me as fascinating with these young kids is how when they hear my story, one of their first questions has to do with, is it bad that they're in a fantasy league? And I think they immediately attach some stigma to participation in gambling. And I like to clarify that doesn't make them a bad person or anything, or it's not bad that there's just consequences to behavior. And I want them to see that and take ownership of their choices. But it is interesting to me how that first jump is, oh, I hear these bad things from a story, so I wonder if that makes me bad. But I clarify that that's not what that means. It's just, here's my story, and it's just the possible reality of it. I'm not trying to make you, stigmatize you or anything.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Catherine, really appreciate the call. Let's go to David in Detroit. David. Go ahead.
Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate the show and your guest's feedback. I'm thinking about the information landscape in Michigan in particular, and maybe this is a social determinants of health show that you could do with state legislators in the free future, because to my knowledge, the state of Michigan has paltry data on gaming in the state. The courts in Michigan don't track bankruptcies and other challenges due to gambling in their cases. And the city of Detroit has over a quarter of its general fund coming from gaming revenue, and to my knowledge, does little or nothing in the space of thinking about those social determinants of health. So I want to see if your guests have any more detailed feedback on Michigan or any other states that are doing good research in this space, because I think one of your guests just said there is no research.
That's a great.
I don't know if that's true.
David, it's a wonderful question. I will add a little context to the subject before I go back to our guests. Detroit, in particular, is very dependent on casino revenue, millions and millions of dollars that we get in taxes. It is also the third largest revenue source for the city of Detroit. And if it were to go away, for instance, overnight, if you know, the casinos were to shut down, the financial calamity that we would experience here would look something like the bankruptcy that we had just 11 years ago. So it is a big part of our lives, and it is a big part of the sustenance, really, of city government. But Dr. Krause, talk about how much we know and how much we're trying to know about this connection between betting and addiction, and then again, to the tension between the public benefits like tax revenue from something like this and the public damage, you know, from addiction and emotional and psychological and financial damage on an individual level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, again, to most people who gamble, who do it for entertainment purposes, don't have an issue, right? So again, you know, base rates can vary, you know, 1%, 2%. It's quite low. The issue is those who develop an issue over time really have a lot of issues, and they become, it's pretty devastating. So I think for the caller's point, yeah, there's very limited funding for research. There's some states that are doing a pretty good job, I would say, or Massachusetts, who before they rolled out their casinos required a percentage to go to treatment and research. They have a very more robust budget. And I think states need to kind of go to a model where maybe a percent or some small amount of the revenue could then be generated for ongoing research. Mm. So, you know, are rates of problems changing in the community? And also how to effectively treat those individuals. And this is not, you know, when you're bringing in the money they're bringing in, that we're talking a very small amount, because again, you're not treating hundreds of thousands of people, but even if it's a small community that has 5,000 people, that's devastating enough. So the amount of money they could use is quite small relative to how much they bring in, even in Detroit, for example. So I think that's a bigger issue. I think you have to do prevention. So speaking to high schools, youth, again, if people do amazing, a little bit of knowledge goes incredibly goes a long way, which is wonderful. It's the issue is when they're really starting to struggle, that's where we need, you know, treatment resources and people to come in and help these folks. And that's what I think really lacking, I think, throughout the country. Some states do a better job, but most states still are not where they should, given the billions and billions of dollars we make and the federal government, right? And yet, for alcohol or other discipline, you know, other areas that make such high revenue, they have, you know, millions of dollars for research, hundreds of millions of dollars for treatment funds, right? And we don't see anything comparable here.
Yeah, yeah. Saul Malik, we've got about a minute left, but I want to give you a chance to respond to that as well.
Well, I like what Dr. Krause said about, that's been my priority, is getting into the schools. And I live in Texas, where we have very little devoted to problem gambling. And so, at least from my perspective, it is important while I'm still in my younger years to be able to get in front of these younger audiences, because they can really connect with this story and see me as almost a peer and not someone just lecturing. And I think that that's so important, is having these ongoing conversations and really even connecting them to current events, to where they're more legitimate, authentic interactions and not just an adult lecturing a kid about what they have to do. I think that gets a lot better reception from young people.
Yeah. Okay. Saul Malik and Dr. Shane Krause, was really great to have both of you here. for this conversation on Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That'll do it for Created Equal today. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org. And we would really love if you subscribe to our podcast. And there you can leave us a rating or a review. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and by David Lines. The audio editing is by Connor Anderson. And the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit Public Radio, your connection to news, music, and conversation.